I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today you'll hear how someone's helping us whip our yard into shape, what rug mistake we were unknowingly making, and we'll get a call from our favorite potter. And nope, it's not the one from Hogwarts.
Well, nice to see you, Sherry.
Nice to see you, John.
Fancy you being around here.
I know, it's weird. We live together. Sometimes I'm a mem to you in this house.
Yeah, and sometimes we put a microphone between the two of us. How'd you like to kick things off today? Should we do what's new?
Sure. So what's new with me is that there are two things rocking my world on Facebook. And for anyone who knows me personally, I'm not big on the whole Facebook thing. But these two groups on Facebook are super helpful to me. And I'm throwing it out there as a suggestion for anyone else to create them if they don't already have them. The first one is that our neighborhood created a board to sort of sell and buy. It's kind of like a Craigslist. It's actually a neighboring neighborhood, but our neighborhood like piggybacked off of it. So we all joined. And it's a private group, so you have to invite someone. So it's really just neighbors and friends inviting neighbors and friends. So you never worry you're going to see something you want to buy, but it's like an hour away. All this stuff is really close. And you're going to someone's house who like you probably know from the gym or from school or some other place, the playground. And it just has been such an easy way to list things also. Because, you know, on Facebook, when you're making a post, you just upload a picture and write something. For example, we got a new console table a little while ago and I've been meaning to sell the old one. And it was just astonishingly simple to take a picture, post it, and within like an hour, it was sold. It was so easy that I just went upstairs and took pictures of an old rug. And I also posted, two old chairs we have. And within about an hour, those were spoken for also. So it was cool to sell four pieces of furniture we don't need and to our friends and neighbors and to not worry that they're, you know, not going to come get them or not good for it because they're all people sort of that we know or friends of friends.
And the other bonus is that when our friends buy our stuff, we get to go visit it occasionally.
Oh, yeah. We have a friend who lives a block away. And whenever I'm in her house, I'm like, it's so funny to see that rug here in this room or that play thing that our kids used to use in your house. It's nice. It feels like they're not going too far.
Well, what's the other group? You said there were two.
Oh, so the other group is a street secret group that we have. So everybody on our street and sort of one street behind us started a secret Facebook group and we all joined it. And that was unclear to me why that would be helpful for a little while. And then it became really crystal clear to me that it was super helpful when you need a like local and even closer than local, like neighbor crowdsourced information. So for example, when we were looking for someone to deliver mulch, it was so nice to post on that. Like, who delivers your mulch? Who do you like? And also, I think it's really great for negotiating deals because I've noticed people on our streets Facebook group will say like, hey, I'm going to get my driveway paved. Does anyone else need theirs paved? If we get, you know, a quote together, we'll probably get a better deal. And so for things like that, like rock delivery, we have a rock driveway. So if we ever got more crushed rock, I'd totally post on there. Does anyone else need crushed rock?
Could get a tree cut down or something like that.
Right. I think if you don't have a street board, it's an easy thing to start. And they might, like me, question what the heck it's for. But I think as time rolls on, it becomes a great way to be social and talk about, you know, gatherings at each other's houses.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's also like party invitations and stuff
right
on there too.
There's some pretty amazing Halloween dress-up parties that happen. Our street is hardcore. What's new for you, John?
Well, what I was going to share for my what's new this week was the fact that we engaged the services of a landscape architect, which sounds much fancier than it was. So let me back up.
I felt very fancy getting that big blueprint.
Yes. So, okay, here's the backstory. If anyone remembers from our second house, we got a Groupon once that we found that was like for 30 minutes of consultation from a, I don't know if she was a landscape architect or a gardener.
A master gardener.
Okay. So some expert on outdoor things. Someone who knows more than we do when it comes to plants and grass and trees.
Which is very easy to do because
yes,
we know 0 to 1%.
So it was like a $79 Groupon. We got 30 minutes. She came over to her house. We walked around our property and it was great. It generally just kicked us in the butt to check off a few things of our list that we were like sort of contemplating, but weren't sure if they were smart or not. Like we took down a vine that needed to be removed and let in more light. She convinced us not to try to plant grass under this tree, this magnolia tree, because it wasn't going to grow. She just kind of like focused us and gave us the confidence to move forward. So
yeah, and I think she saved us a ton of time because we would have spun our wheels for four seasons, like replanting grass, replanting grass, right, replanting grass. Right. And she was like, don't even try it. Nothing will grow there.
So we left that experience feeling like that was a really smart thing to do. And so in this house, we were sort of like, we should really do that again and get some expert outside input to say like, do this, do that. It's always helpful when someone with a fresh perspective comes in and look at something that you see every day.
And especially when we have the added challenge here, which is that deer eat everything.
So after planting some things that did not survive, we were sort of like, I think before we dump more money into plants, we should have that check-in with an expert. And it so happens that one of our friends is a landscape architect. She doesn't practice anymore, but she was able to recommend a friend of hers. So we had this nice woman, Allison, come over. It was $300. She came over for an initial visit where we got to walk the property, talk about sort of what our vision was, what we were hoping to achieve. She got to see how the light was and yada, yada, yada.
And she spent like an hour outside after our consultation measuring. And essentially, she created a blueprint. This is why I felt very fancy. She drew one of those huge architectural
blueprints. Yeah, landscape plan.
And she drew where our house was and where future beds should go and where we should clear things. And she basically took things out of her mind and onto the paper that we never would have come up with.
Yeah, and she like labeled what plants they were and stuff. So it was exactly what we were looking for that we got from that original Groupon at our last house.
Yes.
A 30-minute consultation, but like mega size. And I'll say, you know, $300 is not a small amount of money, but we could have easily spent that in plants.
That would just die.
That would die.
Right.
So for us, it felt like a smart investment. She had a lot of just smart little things. She like pointed out a bush that we didn't even realize was, as she put it, out of scale for where it was. And it just needs to be transplanted back a little bit and it will much better. She pointed out where some of the issues we're having growing is not light, but it's water and we need to work on that. So it was like...
Right. And we would have kept being like, oh, it's just too shady or it needs lime. And like, it was not that. It's that we need irrigation. And so it's helpful to know these things.
It was so worth it to just have some outside expert say, here's a guideline. As we start to buy things in the fall and plant things, we're at least working towards a goal that we all agree to.
Right. It gives me much more confidence because I think our yard could have very easily stayed exactly where it is right now because the amount of plants we need to make our yard look significantly better are in the hundreds of dollars. But I don't think I'd be like ready to run to the nursery and spend $600, $700, $800, especially because we've bought two very expensive trees and they died. So that's our success record here is terrible. And so now I think we have the confidence again to get these things and know that they're going to survive and know where to put them and what the lighting situation is. And it inspired confidence.
Oh, I think the voicemail light on your phone is blinking again.
Ooh, I wonder who it is.
Hey, John and Cherry, it's Jonathan Adler here. Hey, sorry I missed your call. I was in the pottery studio making prototypes. I was covered in clay. Then I was meeting with our marketing team, talking about our fab gifts for the holidays. There was a dog birthday party in the office. You know, the huge. Anyway, I got your message about design mistakes that I've made. It was a struggle because actually I've never made any. Ha, JK. Actually, I can sum up all my regrets in life with one word, lighting. You can never have enough lighting. If you live on the equator in a greenhouse, you need to add a table light or three. If you live on the sun, chandeliers. And anytime I've cheaped out on lighting, I've lived to regret it. Also, put all your lights on dimmers. Dimmers, 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 and you are guaranteed to look richer and even more glamorous than you already are. The other thing about dimmers and moody lighting is that you can save on the house cleaning. Everyone knows if you can't see the dust bunnies, they are not really there. What else were you asking about? Oh, right, the things that people are too quick to overlook in their home. I would say sight lines. I think when you're decorating, you should think about how the room looks when you first see it and think about all the angles. Because so many rooms are decorated like they're only going to be seen from the center, with occupants standing on some sort of lazy Susan spinning around in slow motion. But I think you really should think about how you're going to walk through your space and what your sight lines are so that wherever your eye rests, there is a well-composed composition. All right, what else? Oh, right, favorite home items to splurge on. That's kind of an unfair question for moi because I think you should always splurge. I guess if you had to only get one thing, I'd say get like a giant generous rug that covers your whole floor plan and has enough room to float all of your furniture. You can get a real sense of an expansive, generous space. Ugh, what else about rugs? I guess the other thing that's a big debate in the rug community, and the rug community does have a lot of controversy, is the great leg debate. Should chairs be half on? Should chairs be half off? Not at all. And, you know, I'm a brave dude. I am not afraid to tackle the tough issues. So, here is my answer about the great leg debate on or off rugs. I'm totally Swiss. I am neutral. As long as your rug feels connected to the floor plan at large, I approve. I know that rugs aren't always perfect, and I think you just need to sort of surrender to the half-on, half-off lifestyle and deal with more important issues in your life, if there are any, which there probably aren't. Anyway, I hope to catch you guys again soon. Please come visit my HQ. We call it the Fantasy Factory here in Soho. It's full of rad people, cool stuff, and most especially, it is full of lots of really cool dogs. So I'm going to go make a pot, play with some dogs, and I will catch you guys later. Merci. Bye.
So that was awesome. Thank you so much, Jonathan. And as for his rug comment, I actually think it relates to something we observed recently when we did an update to our daughter's room. So perk up your little ears if you have a biggish room with a biggish rug in it, especially if it's like an 8x10 foot rug floating in the center of a space. The main tip is look at your rug, dudes. Is there nothing on your rug? Maybe there's something tiny on your rug, like a little pedestal table or the two front legs of a daybed. That's not enough to be on an 8x10 rug. For some weird reason, we know this about living rooms. We know it looks more grounded and lived in and homey when you have a big ottoman or coffee table sitting in the middle. We love a sectional because it juts out into the room, lands on the rug, grounds everything, and it looks totally homey instead of looking like all the furniture is pushed against the walls and there's a big skating rink in the middle. But for some reason in our daughter's room, we just were not seeing that that issue was going on.
Yeah, I think we intuitively know that a rug in a room needs to be grounded with furniture on it. And we didn't do that in our daughter's room. We wouldn't have done something in a living room where we'd make sure like the couch is on it, the table is on it. But in her room, we had the bed pushed against the wall, the dresser, the bookcase, everything was there. I think our rational thought was like, oh, let's leave it wide open so she has room to play.
Yes, I do believe that we were like, oh, this is great. It's a really big room. There's lots of room for her to spread out. And we thought like, now she can have a little table and a little chair and look at all these little things we can add to this really big room. But it certainly wasn't the most efficient use of a big room. It was just sort of like not using the middle 80% of the room at all is not a good solution for a room.
Yeah, and I think in any room, if it's not full enough, I mean, you're not saying you want it to be overfilled or stuffed or crammed with things, but if it's not full, it can make a room not look complete or cozy. It can look like it's still in progress when maybe you think it's done. So what we learned here was not because we recognized we were having this issue, but we made an update, and after the update, we realized, oh wow, we had been doing that wrong.
Right, like hindsight 2020. So the update was that we had upgraded the guest room in our house to have a queen size bed, and we were left with a full size bed in good condition that was comfortable. And our daughter kept saying she wanted the big bed. She wanted us to put the full size bed in her room. She overheard us saying like, now what are we going to do with this? And she was like, dibs, it is mine.
And I think we resisted it because we liked the day bed that she had because it served well when she was transitioning from a crib because it was low. It had three sides.
Right.
And she was small. She didn't need a lot of space.
And we thought, oh, and it fits against the wall and leaves all of this open space in the middle for playing.
Yes, we can have a dance floor.
Do you see where this is going, guys? But we love her and wanted her to be happy. So in the end, we said, well, it's probably going to be a downgrade aesthetically, but we want her to have the room she wants. So we'll put the full size bed in there and we'll surprise her while she's at school. So one of the last weeks of school when she was still gone during the day, we switched out her day bed, disassembled it, and put the full size bed in the room. And it was like immediately the like,
oh, I see. I wouldn't describe it like that. I would say I was like, oh, this is too big.
Oh, see, I was like, yes, this is exactly what the room needed. There is still plenty of room to play. Again, it's an 8x10 rug.
Yeah, but you know me, like any change takes me a little time to get used to. And I think I looked at it like, oh my gosh, this thing is like this honking monster in the middle of the room. And we did kind of like originally we had it pushed against the wall, just like the daybed, like with the side against the wall.
Right.
But that wasn't working. So then we stuck it out with the head against the wall, kind of like a traditional bed. You know,
right.
Sticks out of the room. You know, it just took a second for my brain to say like, oh my gosh, this is taking up a lot of space.
And I was like, oh, she's going to love this. We're going to get her side tables. And we ended up getting her touch lamps, which are like her favorite thing in the whole world because she thinks they're magical. But I just think it's true that you might have to get used to something. But a lot of times, every time you walk by a room, you go like, that was like the room that every time I walked by, I was like, it's cute. Maybe the rug's too busy. Maybe it needs different art.
Maybe I should bring in another poof or six.
Right. Like maybe it needs 30 drum stools. But never once was I like, hey, I think something needs to be on the rug. And it's just weird. I don't know if it was because it was a bedroom or a place space or a kid's room, but even in our bonus room and our living room, where our kids play all the time, there is not an open skating rink rug. There's an ottoman and a sectional in the living room on the rug, grounding our large rug in this large room. And in our bonus room, there's a giant sectional and baskets and, you know, other things grounding that rug. So I think it literally was one of the only rooms in the house. Even our son's room, which is smaller and has a smaller rug, I think the rug in there is 5x7. There is a big armchair, ottoman, and side table on that 5x7. And so I guess the tip is just, if you have a room that feels restless or looks like maybe less polished or finished or balanced than you'd like, pay attention to if everything is pushed against the walls and if there's something you can bring into the middle of the space, just jutting out like a chair and an ottoman or a side table. Maybe it is a sectional instead of a sofa if the whole room is very, you know, sort of pressed up against the walls. It really can make a huge difference.
As much as I was hesitant when we first put the full-size bed in there, you know, within a day, I like adjusted to the new reality and I was like, oh yeah, that's how it should look. It looks like a more complete room now with that in there.
Actually, if you want to see pictures of the new bed and the whole room, we just shared a post on our blog with a ton of them. It recaps the entire evolution of the space from the day we bought the house. So you can check it out at younghouselove.com/blog, and we'll link to it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast.
You know what it's time for?
It's time for you to quiz me.
Yep, it's time for What's Not. So like usual, we're going to kick this off with our paint color category.
Okay.
This category is New York State of Mind paint colors.
Oh, I like these.
And we're going to play this one a little bit differently. I'm going to give you more than five. Some are real, some are fake. So as we go, you tell me what's real and what's not.
Okay.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Statue of Liberty.
Real.
Yep. You can probably guess what color it is.
Green.
Yes, greenish. Statue of Liberty colored is how I describe it. Number two, Wall Street.
Real.
Yes.
Black.
Gray.
Oh.
Broadway.
Real.
Fake.
Oh, I would make that bright yellow like the playbill.
Oh, that's a good idea. Central Park.
Real and green.
Yes, it's kind of like a muted lime, I would describe it as. Brooklyn.
Real, and it's like an evergreen brown color.
It is real. It's more of like a steely blue-green.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, I think Brooklyn Bridge colored, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Although, isn't the Brooklyn Bridge like stone? Maybe it's like a Manhattan Bridge colored?
I don't know why they would do that.
Fifth Avenue.
Fake.
Real.
Oh, is it orange?
It's teal.
Wow. I knew it was going to be like a strange color you wouldn't think of.
Tribeca.
That's real, and it's like a gray.
It's a kind of a taupey purple.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I could see that, though.
Astoria.
Oh, I wish this was real. John and I both lived in Astoria at different times. It's fake.
It's real. Pittsburgh Paints makes it. It's kind of like a light purple. Bronx.
Bronx is real and it's black.
Bronx is fake.
Dang, they need to make a Bronx.
Times Square.
That's got to be real.
Yep.
And it's like orange.
It's a camel color.
Oh, okay.
Last one. Grand Central.
I wish that was real. I love Grand Central. It's real and it's like a yellow.
It's fake.
Dang, wouldn't that be pretty like a yellowy gold, you know, with the light coming into the building?
Yeah. So good work on those. You did a pretty good job. There were others I didn't include on the list. Empire State is gray. There's Off-Broadway, which is a dark gray. And there's actually one called Subway Tile.
Oh, which is white.
Which is blue.
Oh, okay.
Kind of a muted blue, but definitely blue.
Okay. And now...
Okay. Wait, I have another one for you.
But I'm flipping the script because I have one for you.
What? I'm not allowed to be quizzed.
I came across this article and I thought it was interesting. And then I thought, I'm going to quiz John and see if he gets it right. So housebeautiful.com shared a list of the 7 biggest decor mistakes that drive designers crazy. So which of these 5 mistakes, there's one of these 5 that wasn't on there. So which one, you have to figure out which one it was.
Okay, I understand the format.
I'm glad you do. The first one is getting carried away with decorative painting.
That's certainly a mistake.
Number 2 is karate chopping your pillows.
Okay.
Number 3 is pushing furniture against the walls.
Uh-huh.
Number 4 is grouping candles together.
Okay.
And number 5 is buying all of your furniture as a set.
Well, I'm going to have to go for the candle one because I can't imagine House Beautiful would assume that is a big mistake to drive people crazy.
Guess what? That's real.
Oh my God.
Out of 7.
Did they say why grouping your candles is such a big issue?
Well, first of all, the one that's made up is buying all your furniture as a set that I threw in there. But I feel like that's a very often discussed dilemma that people have, is they buy it as a set and then the room doesn't look as interesting as if they collected things over time or everything didn't match. So I threw that in there hoping.
So that's a Sherry Petersick design mistake.
Right. I mean, I don't think it's always a mistake, but it certainly could drive designers crazy if you went to like Rooms To Go and bought the whole furniture set.
Right. Especially if they're the one being brought in saying like, make this work.
Right. The funny thing is that there were three of these seven mistakes that had to do with lighting. So it appears as if different designers they interviewed for this article all had a thing with lighting. So one of them was not paying attention to lighting. A second one was relying on a single light source. And then the third one was grouping your candles because they like the glow to be spread throughout a room and balanced instead of all the glow in one spot.
This sounds like we live in a place where the only light source is candles. Well, you stumped me.
I'm proud.
So we're going to try something new. Sherry wanted to share a tip with you guys, and I challenged her to do it in under 60 seconds.
Which is exciting and nerve-wracking. It's good to give me parameters or I'll talk all day, but I don't know how I'm going to do it 60 seconds.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be described as short-winded.
Right, exactly.
Just short.
It's true. Short and long-winded.
So are you ready for your 60 seconds?
I am.
Okay, it starts in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, this is a curtain trick for making your windows look bigger and your curtains looking fuller and more luxurious. First thing you've probably heard me say is high and wide with the curtain rod. That means around 8 to 12 inches wide past the window trim, so your curtain panel has a place to lay against the wall instead of blocking the light in the window. It makes the window look big. Mounting it higher above the window trim, maybe splitting the difference between the window trim and the ceiling, allows you to let the window breathe and lift the panels higher so the eye goes up in the room and the window seems nice and big. My next tip is two curtain panels per side. It makes them look fuller, and yes, buying two panels per side is more expensive, but if you're using inexpensive curtains like from Target, IKEA, or HomeGoods, two panels make such a difference compared to one. One can look flimsy and small and kind of piddly. Two looks thick. You can't tell where one begins and the next one ends when you push them together, so it just looks like one super lush, beautiful curtain. We've used this in the office and in our bonus room. It works especially well on large windows. So get your rods high and wide and make those curtains two panels per side.
Nicely done.
Why, thank you.
Are you out of breath?
I was sweating a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
I feel like I need a curtain panel to dab my brow.
Ew, gross. That's not a tip.
Don't use your curtain panels for perspiration issues.
But if you do two of them.
Right, he's both.
You'll feel more luxurious. So let's end with some more digging, Sherry.
Let's do it. What are you digging?
So what I'm digging this week are a couple of tools that have made our painting experiences much better. We have often taken the easy route or the cheap route to our painting tools, like just using the paint tray liner as our paint tray, even though it's a little bit soft and crinkly and plasticky. And like, instead of having a cup with our paint in it, just using the lid of the paint can.
Right. You can put like one dollop of paint and walk around the room and you do like two strokes of your brush and you're like, dang it, I need more paint.
Yeah, you gotta make sure you don't tip it so it drips off the side.
Right.
So finally, after years of doing the cheap way, we bought a handy paint cup. Handy is the name of the brand. It's those like red cups you might see at the home improvement store. And it's just a plastic cup. It's like less than $3. It's a lightweight cup for you to put your paint in. I know it sounds really simple and dumb, but it has been so helpful. It has a handle.
And it has a magnet in it where you can stick your paintbrush so that your paintbrush doesn't sink into the paint. If you need a hand free to wipe something or the phone rings and you don't have to stick your brush in the paint.
Yeah, you don't have to rest it down in the big.
Yes, it just sort of magnetizes to the top of the cup.
Again, it's only $3. It's really simple, but it is like really smart in that way. And so after using that for a while, I finally got the handy paint tray, which is like the paint tray version of that thing. It's a big red plastic tray that you can put a liner in. And again, it's not like a super complicated thing. I think it's actually $10 or maybe a little less than $10.
But in hindsight, buying just the liner and using just the liner is ridiculous. For the amount of times we've painted, we should have sprung the $10 for the paint tray.
Well, it's just like the little things. Like it has like really wide feet, so you know it's like stable and it's not going to get knocked over easily. And like it has a handle, so it's easy to pick up and move around without splashing your paint all over the place.
Right.
And they do sell liners for the cup that, you know, you can use for your paint and then throw away. But I actually don't buy those because I've just found that if you pour out all the excess paint and then just let the paint cup dry, once the paint is fully dried, you can just sort of peel it all off in one big sheet. And it's actually, you know, weirdly satisfying.
It's super satisfying. It's like in grade school when you covered your hands with Elmer's glue so you could peel it off.
Although I will say, if you're using primer, you might want to use a liner because the primer doesn't really come off on a sheet like that, like latex paint will. But I do use the paint tray liners for the tray just because it's much easier to clean up and you can switch your trays in and out if you need. The cup is only $3. The tray is only $10. They sell them both at Lowe's and Home Depot and on Amazon. So we will be sure to put a link to that on younghouselove.com/podcast. What are you digging, Sherry?
I'm digging Turkish towels. For anyone who doesn't know, they're like these thinner towels that have like a fringe, like a knotted fringe on the bottom of them. You might see like white ones with a fringy bottom folded over like a wooden stool in like a boho looking bathroom or hung up on a hook in a very, sometimes like a rustic room. I like them because I feel like they slip into lots of decor. We've had them as hand towels in a lot of bathrooms, like in our downstairs bathroom and upstairs. We've had these little fringy towels. And lately I've been loving them. I got a few more and we use them as dish towels in the kitchen because they're so thin. They're absorbent, but they're thin. So they don't look like a bath towel in the kitchen. And since I'm crazy and when I like something, I go for it. I also got a few that are full length, like I almost said human towels. Like we have dog towels and human towels. They're like blue and white striped with a long fringe and we bring them to the pool or I hang them up on the hooks in the bathroom. We use them after we shower. I don't know. At first I wasn't sure how I'd like the thinness of them because you know how a plush towel just feels so like cozy, but they're still absorbent. And I think, I don't know, maybe fringe overrules plushness for me.
Where are you buying them?
I've ordered some from Joss & Main. I found some at TJ Maxx. And West Elm had some great ones a little while back. So they're kind of everywhere. I also would totally do like a Turkish towel type window treatment. Like buy one and make it into like a Roman shade with the fringe on the bottom would be really cute. Because they make even thinner ones that are like a woven. And I also think it would be cool if they started making fabric curtains inspired by them with like the fringy bottom. I think they're definitely already popular, but they could keep going and do cool things with them.
They have like a whole outfit.
Exactly, like a sombrero and a vest all made out of Turkish towels. You'd like part the fringe so you could see your eyes.
You'd be like Sia.
Exactly. It could be like a Sia wig, but with like a Turkish towel.
I think you're onto something.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
If you don't want to miss future episodes, be sure to click the subscribe button in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And hey, if you're enjoying these episodes, why not tell a friend? We really appreciate your help spreading the word.
And if you're scrolling along on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or Pinterest, feel free to follow us. Just search for Young House Love, and there we are.
And if you want to see notes, links, or photos from this episode, just go to younghouselove.com/podcast. You'll even find a previous interview we did with Jonathan Adler a few years back.
Bye.
Later.